Tim and Friends. Of course, I go by the name of the Kid, Famous. You and I are tuned in to the Tim and Friends show. Hello, education, entertainment, coast to coast. Ball it up, call it entertainment. Let's get this started. Uncle Tim, let's start this show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
Tim and Friends. Time for Tim and Friends, episode number 28, live from the Sportsnet studios in downtown Toronto. I'm Tim McAuliffe. Thank you for being a friend. This show is jam-packed. One of the newest Maple Leafs and perhaps the prize of the deadline, Nick Foligno, is stopping by. As if that weren't enough, Elliot Friedman and Kenny Reid in hour number two to get you set for a huge game on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. The Flames are facing basically a couple of wins in Montreal, a couple of must wins in Montreal over the next three nights. And if you missed it, the rubber of a three-game set between the Jays and the Yankees in Dunedin already went down this afternoon. Man, was it an entertaining one. We'll give you the full post-game show with Joe Siddle and Ben Nicholson-Smith. But we start with the highlights as another one hits the IL. Ross Stripling scratched from this one. Forearm tightness. So TJ Zoik got the emergency call. Second batter he faces happens to be Aaron Judge, who's got 99 problems, but this pitch ain't one. First to two he hit. It's 1-0 Yankees. Bottom of the second. Alejandro Kirk, 0 for 13. Not anymore, Botch. He takes Corey Kluber deep. It's a two-run shot. It's 2-1. Bottom three, Bo Bichette, who extended his hitting streak to 11 games in his first at-bat. Didn't look like it was gone, but it goes Oppo. Jays lead 3-1. Now top four, 3-2. Gleyber Torres, deep fly ball. Josh Palacios thought it was going to go off the wall. It hops behind him, put runners at second and third. Two batters later, Gio Urshela cashes both runners, and the Yankees take a 4-3 lead. That's it for Zoik. Tough break, four earned, four hits over four innings. Bottom of the sixth, bases loaded. Jonathan Loaisiga uncorks Rowdy Tellez, fleet of foot. We're tied at four to the bottom of the ninth. Bo Bichette, have a day.
Breaking ball high in the air. Hicks ranging back at the wall, at the track. Get out of here. God, a walk-off home run for Bo Bichette. Have a day, Bo.
Son of a Bichette. No, literally, Dante. Game winner. And with all the IL talk, 4-2 against the Yankees, 6-6 on the year, not all that bad. Jays will start a four-game series in Kansas City tomorrow night. If you were holding out for a hero, here's Bo with Buck and Pat after the win.
Hey, Bo, Buck Martinez and Pat Tabler, congratulations on a great afternoon. You're really starting to swing the bat well. How do you feel at the plate?
I feel pretty good, just trying to slow things down. Worked out today.
How does it feel to walk off the Yankees for a second time in your career? And you played a lot in this ballpark, obviously, but you guys look really comfortable here at TD Park.
Yeah, I mean, we're just, going out there and play as hard as we can, control what we control. And, I think we've been having really good at-bats lately, and it's been fun to see.
What's been the key to all those great at-bats, Bo?
I think just trusting your ability, being All right.
Guess
all
right. Who? Yeah, guess who, right?
Yeah, imagine that, huh?
Glad he's right there.
Yeah. I think just, pressing a little bit earlier, me, myself, some other guys, but just knowing how good we are, I think, slowed the game down a little bit.
You hit a breaking ball out. How did you become such a good breaking ball hitter?
Practice. My dad threw me a lot of breaking balls growing up, so, I just reacted and saw it. It just felt good.
Bo, you had a terrific play at second base, and you and Marcus Semien appear to be really on the same page. And talk us through that play where you went behind the bag and flipped to Marcus.
Yeah, I just spun, turned around, realized he wasn't there, so I just tried to lead him. He made a good play, get his foot on the bag.
How much time did you guys spend together in the spring to get to where you are right now?
Every day. Just pretty much just me and him would be on the field with Louie and you know, we'd be taking ground balls for 30 minutes, just us two. So a lot of work, a lot of hard work, and it, you know, it's paying off.
Love it. Ho-hum just walked off the New York Yankees, hijacked on his way out of the studio. Joe Siddle joining us for a couple segments and joining us via Zoom, we hope, we assume, not with just shorts on. Ben Nicholson-Smith, thank you very much, boys, for doing this.
Of course. Good to be here.
All right. Listen, let's start with you, Joe. It felt like it might be a day of missed opportunities given all the chances the Jays had to put this one away. But Bo saved the day, and I love how calm, cool, and collected after walking off the Yankees in, what, his second year in the bigs?
He makes it seem like such an easy game, and I think at times it is for Bo, but when you don't cash in with runners in scoring position, especially against a team like the Yankees, you don't normally get away with it. But the game has changed in that regard. With all of the home runs that we see now, you can do that. You can strike out all you want, and a couple big swings at the bat can win you a ball game, and it did today for the Blue Jays.
We saw that. Benny, not bad, all things considered, to get 2 of 3 from the Yankees with all the injury news. TJ Zoik pushed into service, and you end up 6-6 and 4-2 against the Yanks.
I think that is pretty good, right? Like to play this well, you know, obviously it could be better, but at the same time, they don't have their closer, Kirby Yates, Nate Pearson's out, George Springer's out, Tay Oscar's been out for most of this time. And the Yankees are arguably the best team in the American League. So I think big picture is they head to Kansas City and a much weaker team. This team is in a pretty good spot.
Benny, I'll follow up. And outside of getting cold in game one of this series, and you understand why, he's one of the best pitchers in the game, the bats have awoken a little bit from their slumber, it seems.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And Bo and Vladdy just leading the way. Having those two at the top of the batting order is just so huge for this team, because I think toward the bottom of the order, it's almost inevitable you're going to have a couple guys who are slumping, or maybe it's a rookie like Palacios who's just getting in, although he's been pretty good since he's come up. But to have Bo and Vladdy 1-2 or 1-3 in that order is just such a good base to build from.
Let's focus in a little bit on that, Joe, because the first home run that Bo hit, I didn't think he got it out. Like, how's he doing this?
What's remarkable about Bo is he's not a big guy. He's not big statured guy, so he has to create more. And you can see in his swing, when you really break it down, he creates a lot of torque, a lot of energy, and that translates into tremendous bat speed. Hitters will talk about getting a deep barrel turn, and what that means is when your hands are up by your ear, you get that barrel turned quickly, like pointing to the catcher. He does that. So it does two things. Gets the bat on plane quickly, but he creates so much energy here because he's not such a big guy. But when you create that energy and then it basically uncoils, it's a tight coil, and then he lets it go. He gets the bat through the zone as good as anyone. But what I marvel at is how he handles the fastballs, but he also handles the breaking balls. And when you ask good hitters, when do you know you're starting to lock it in? Because he didn't start that great this year.
No.
A lot of hitters will say, when my timing is right on both the fastball and the breaking ball. Now, Bo looks like a guy to me we've seen, and he's even talked about it. Remember last year is the story going around the Blue Jays lineup, and his dad, Dante, was helping a lot of hitters with Guillermo. And they talked about sitting soft, sitting spin, looking breaking ball, and reacting to fastball.
Yeah.
That's not easy to do. It's hard to get to fastballs, especially in today's game at 97 and 98 when you're looking off speed. But what that is, it's a mentality. And by looking off speed, what you're doing is you're slowing things down. And that's what Bo has done a lot better lately, and he admitted it after the game. You slow things down, and you actually move your body more efficiently. You trust yourself more. He used the line, and he said that as hitters, we have more time than we think. And what he means by that is the worst thing you can do as a hitter, you get yourself in trouble by thinking you have to hurry, you have to rush. And when you do that, you're helping the pitcher a ton. When you slow things down and you're more controlled, his swing, I call it controlled violence, yeah, because it's a violent swing. He'll chase, he'll strike out, he'll swing and miss, but he'll do a lot of damage when the ball's in the zone, just like he did today.
I'm glad you added the easier said than done. As you're explaining that, like, it seems so simple, and yet every guy at this level is trying to do those things, and yet Bo at this tender age, and it probably helps who his dad is and the pedigree, but at this age, being able to do that is so impressive.
And everyone's body is different, so Everybody's body moves differently, so you can't just say, this is how you hit. It's not the same for everyone. For his stature, he has to create. He does it really well.
All right, I want to get to different bodies in a second and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., but the slash line now after the rough start for Bo Bichette, hitting .327, on base .358, slugging .653. So the slash line has now become
pretty darn impressive for Bo Bichette, even with the slow start. All right, Ben, so let's talk about Vladdy. And listen, we're talking about 11, 12 games in, and we have seen 11, 12-game sample sizes from Vladdy before, but does the weight loss tell us that this might be different?
I think that it is different, and I know it is a small sample, but I'm seeing a different plate approach from Vladdy, and it is more reminiscent of what we saw when he was coming up through the minors and what he was demonstrating then with just the patience that we would see sometimes in spring training, or I think back to times in Buffalo where he would just be very, very deliberate about what he's attacking and what he's not. And so that leads him into good situations. He's obviously got incredible bat speed. He's got incredible bat to ball skills as well. So you combine all that and it really is seeming to come together for him. And then when he does hit the ball, if he has to leg a single into a double, if he has to score on a wild pitch, he now has the speed to do that as well.
Are you seeing the same sort of things from Vladdy?
Yeah, so Ben alluded to what we saw coming up and what we heard about back when he was in the minor leagues. And then I keep going back to that walk-off home run he hit in Montreal. Remember that exhibition game?
Yeah.
If you look at his body in that video, and if you look at the way his body moves in that video, it was far different than what we saw when he put the weight on. He just couldn't move his body as well. And when you're not as athletic, you're not going to be as strong and generate the bat speed Ben alluded to. So now we're starting to see that. I still think he's got more in the tank. I know that sounds crazy, but there are still balls. He had a ground ball today. I think it was over 100 miles per hour for a base hit. I think we're going to see more balls that are driven on the line and in the air than so many ground balls, because ground balls oftentimes are a result of a ball getting a little deep or cutting your swing off. When he's right, he's driving in. He's going to be a gap guy that some of them are going to be hit so darn hard they're going to get over the fence. It's a different body and a different result. He can do things other people can't.
All right, this is a little different post-game show here on Tim and Friends. Of course, Ben Nicholson-Smith joining us on Zoom. Joe Siddle in studio. We've also got Jesse Rubinoff in studio. So if you want to add anything to the equation, how you feeling at 6-6? How do you feel about taking 4 of 6 from the Yankees? And if there are concerns, which we will get to, about the IL, let us know at Tim and Friends on either Instagram or Twitter, and Jesse will bring them to us. All right, before we get to the IL stuff, Ben, let me ask you about Alejandro Kirk, because you watch what this kid does and you think this is a big league player, but I'm reminded all the time, like, he didn't play past high A ball before he got here. So it's nice to see him get off the schneid. However, are you worried that maybe this has come a little too quickly, or do you see big league all over this?
Well, what we've seen so far hasn't been the best of Alejandro Kirk, and definitely doesn't compare to what we saw when he first came up late last summer. And he was so good, even in that brief 25 at-bat sample. So he set the bar really high. I guess we shouldn't be stunned that he is having to adjust, and especially, facing different pitchers, all kinds of different adjustments for him to make. So it's not shocking. I think the baseline at that position, and we're seeing it with Danny Jansen, and of course, Joe knows like how hard it is at that position to meet all those demands and still be tasked with hitting major league pitching. It's a tough assignment for anyone, but Kirk obviously showed some progress today.
You see it too, Joe?
I do, and I'm very cautiously optimistic, because I know the levels of the minor leagues are there for a reason. And when he was in high A ball, you can succeed, but then you go to double A and you face the next level of pitching. You face the guys that all have very good arms, but they now also have a good secondary pitch that maybe they can use when they're behind in the count. And if you have success there, then you go to triple A where you're facing an even different type of pitcher, because now you're facing pitchers that have been in the big leagues and been sent down, guys on the cusp of going to the big leagues. So it just keeps getting better and better. And I think each level you go through as a hitter, you have to have those struggles. And sometimes you go for 2 for 20 or whatever it is, and then you got to figure out how to get out of it facing that kind of pitching. And he hasn't had that. So I think this transition is going to be very difficult. But some of the at-bats that he has and we have seen from him, he looks like a guy that's got a pretty darn good idea at the plate. And what I mean by that is that plate discipline again. If he's not going to be a guy that's going to chase out of the zone, he's going to be disciplined. He makes it a tough at-bat. And if he keeps doing that, Mr. Right. Jansen better be heads up, because this guy might be catching 4 days a week.
Joe Siddle, Ben Nicholson-Smith joining me, Tim McAuliffe. All right, I'm going to get to the IL stuff after. I'm going to save all of the IL updates, all of the IL news, and what the Jays are going to have to deal with over the next little while for after the break. But before we get to break, I thought about the conversation that we saw between Pat, Buck, and Bo. You got to be careful with that. But Pat, Buck, and Bo, we're talking a little bit about defense. And there was a nice play that Bo made where he went behind the bag, little flip to Simeon, get the lead runner, two out, important part of the game to keep it. I think it was 4-4 at the time. And a thought popped into my head. This is a young kid who is learning at the big league level to play shortstop. Are we just going to have to deal with the ups and downs and then figure it out? Like, they're not replacing him this year. And this whole, like, I get it. You're playing at the big league level. You're playing in a, with a team that has expectations. But, Joe, this just feels like, why are we going to play this up and down game when you know it's a kid and you're going to have to figure it out?
Because you have to find out. And I think the Blue Jays have to find out if Bo Bichette...
But we're going to go through that this
you're
year.
You're going to, but yeah. You're going to find out probably for 162, and hopefully he plays about 140, 145 of them, if he's going to be your shortstop when this team wins the AL East. Now, could be this year. You'll need to probably shore up that pitching with another free agent, this one. This is building something for sure. Right. You're in a really good spot right now. But I think a full season this year, even Biggio at third. Is Biggio going to be your third baseman, and is Bo going to be your shortstop when this team wins the AL East? I highly doubt both, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But where are they going to be? I think Biggio could be that super utility guy, the classic Ben Zobrist. I know everybody wants people to be Ben Zobrist, but he truly can, I think, if he can get back to hitting the way we think we know how.
And another easier said than done.
It certainly is, but I do think that's what this year is for. Of course, they're trying to win the AL East right now, but they're using this year to find that out because I don't doubt that this team's going to keep getting better in terms of acquisitions. They haven't traded anybody yet.
Right.
Some of these young kids are going to go, and they're going to acquire some arms, I think.
Benny, what I'm saying here, or what I'm trying to say here, is you're going to deal with Bo at shortstop for this year. It's not going to happen before this year, but you got to find out this year if that's your shortstop of the future. Like, you don't think they're going to move away from it, right?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so, Tim, because, you know, when you're looking at what he's able to do, he does have those plays in his playbook, and he is able to make some of those impressive plays. Now, we've also seen in the course of the first 10, 12 games this year that he's messed up some chances that he, by his own admission, should have gotten. But I still think there's reason to be patient here, and I look no further than Marcus Semien for a reminder of that, because when Semien came up with the White Sox, he was not a good defender, and I guarantee those same conversations were happening in Chicago at the time. And it's different with a team with a lot of expectations like the Blue Jays have, but it does take some patience at times, and Bichette is showing that he at least can, in stretches, deliver on that potential.
I'm just imagining the ups and downs of every post game and every conversation after he does it, feeling for Joe and Jamie and Ben writing the stories and me sitting here. All right, time for the break. We'll keep the Jays post talk going, though. Plus, Leafs Nick Foligno live from his quarantine. Ken Reed in studio. Jesse Rubinoff with your tweets coming up. Plus, Elliot Friedman, Mark Stein on a post Jays edition of Tim and Friends.
Down in front, Gaudreau right in, scores! Johnny Gaudreau in overtime, and the Flames win in Toronto.
Down the floor to Herter, flips it up, it's good! What a shot by Kevin Herter! Beat the buzzer, I do believe!
Fourth, the Blue Jackets move in here, and they score! What a spectacular goal by Nick Foligno, the captain!
Baseball player, Alex Rodriguez?
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Okay.
Well, I know he's going to be the owner, but I don't know nothing about baseball.
Breaking ball high in the air. Hicks ranging back at the wall, at the track. Get out of here. God, a walk-off home run for Bo Bichette. Have a day.
What a day for Bo Bichette, and that's his second career walk-off home run. And Bo Bichette has won the series for the Blue Jays.
Right out of the MLB The Show commercial with the jumper at home plate. Nice walk-off win for the Jays to take the series against the Yankees. Bo Bichette, the hero today, and despite all the injuries piling up for this team, Bichette says they're confident in whoever needs to fill the void.
Yeah, obviously the guys who are hurt are guys who can really help us, but at the same time, I think we all noticed in spring training that we have a lot of guys who can step in and not only play every day, but, you know, impact the game, you know, aside from the starting nine that should have been on opening day. So, you know, we're confident in everybody that comes up here. There's even more guys that haven't gotten a chance yet that, you know, I think that we're confident that come up here and produce. So, you know, I think we've handled it well, and we'll just continue to battle.
All right, we're going to get to your tweets in a second here, but Kenny Reed, who's coming up a little later on in the show, tweeted into the show, Tim and Friends show prep, and it looks as though Reeder in an awful pair of shoes is just watching what we're doing.
Someone stole his laces, I think.
It seems like he's enjoying his show prep. Speaking of tweets, Jesse Rubinoff, our digital producer, now into the equation. What are the folks talking about right now?
So we asked the Blue Jays now, you referenced it, 6-6, but they've taken two series from the Yankees. We asked, are you confident this team will get better? And we got a bunch of good responses. Start with Jay, who says, yes, only three of their hitters have been above average. That's not going to continue. And they're not going to keep going 0-10 with runners in scoring position, which is what they were today. Nine men left on base in the game this afternoon. Bradley says, Biggio needs to be moved down in the batting order. Five is too good for him right now. Biggio struggling to start the year, a 179 average, 309 on base percentage.
Joe, you think that's going to happen?
I do, but I think it might have a lot more to do with George Springer coming back, because if I get Springer back right now, which they're not quite yet, but when he does, I would love to see Springer, Bo, Vladdy, 1-2-3. I think Semien would be perfect down there, like with Grichuk. I still like Teoscar 4 once he gets healthy, but when you get all of these guys back, that's some damage up top, and now it really lengthens things down there. Because once Teoscar comes back to you, you're going to have like a Rowdy or a Grichuk maybe on the bench, whoever's not DH, and you're going right to have the extra outfielder or Rowdy on the bench. And right now, there's not a strong bench, and that's the problem, because you get late in a ballgame, for example, when Jansen is playing, you need to pinch hit. There's not a whole lot. Maybe Kirk would pinch hit for him now, but you'd like to have a little more depth there.
Understood. Any more? We said this show would be of the people.
Yeah,
Jesse,
we got two quick ones. Yeah. Matt says, will George Springer play a game as a Blue Jay? So bringing the positivity, Matt, yes, is. And then one more, also injury-related. David says maybe, but if we keep getting the volume of injuries we've had, 500 is going to be out of reach. The injuries are a problem, no doubt. There's a lot of them on the injured list right
well,
now.
Well, it's a problem if you're not winning games, but they just took two or three from the Yankees, yep, who are favored to be. Listen, I'm not suggesting that the injuries aren't a big story. They are. Benny, let's talk about this. Yesterday, Springer not going on the upcoming trip, which is at least six games. Phelps gets drilled with a line drive. Merriweather leaves with hip irritation, then goes on the 10-day injured list. I'm working on my positivity, but what the hell, man?
Yeah, I think that's a fair reaction, Tim. I mean, it's not good, right? This is not at all how they drew it up. It's going to test their depth. And I think ultimately the best teams in baseball have enough depth that they can get through these stretches. And the Jays do have, they're in the midst of this stretch right now of 16 in a row, with the exception of that one rainout. They have four off days coming up later in the month. That can help them rest a little bit. Maybe that helps them avoid, you know, some of the back of that rotation, but it's tough. And there's really no relenting in a 6-month schedule. So that depth will be tested.
It seems like those 2 days off, not only good for Joe, who covers the team every day, but also good for a rotation that we don't even know who's going tomorrow, right?
Yeah, the good thing is you get a couple of days off that week. You get a couple more days off the following week. They could probably go with four for a little while right now. Finding out who goes tomorrow, I'm in favor of a starting pitcher. I don't like these bullpen days. They used a few relievers today. You use a bullpen day tomorrow. Now we know Tanner Roark is lurking in the wings, and he can give you innings. Malone is down there too, but I'd rather bring up a starter. And for me, it comes to Anthony Kaye. And you bring up a fourth lefty. Can you imagine four lefties in your rotation? Right now, I would say okay, because I was against that going into the season. But then when you think of the way, if Ray and Mats can keep doing what they're doing, and we know it doesn't matter to Ryu if he's facing a righty or lefty, they handled righties pretty well. They pounded that fastball in. So I like the way they did it. Kay's not different than those guys. He'll pound the fastball into righties too. So I'd rather see that though than upset your bullpen, because you use four and five and six guys in your bullpen. that can kind of leave you hanging for the next few days.
Listen, left is right and right is wrong. As a lefty here, a four-man rotation with four lefties, it's like the foursome of lefties when you walk onto a golf course. It just feels good. I keep hearing patients with soft tissue. And I understand, Ben, but a lot of Jays fans just want to see Springer, as Matt said, in the lineup. I understand it. Do we have any update on where he's at?
Well, it sounds like he's been able to take some batting practice. That's a good sign, obviously. It's ultimately going to come down to how that quad responds to some base running drills, because he's going to need those legs under him to be the center fielder and be that base runner that the Blue Jays paid $30 million for. And at this point, you know, it's hard to imagine that he's going to be back before April 27th, which is when the Blue Jays return to Dunedin. And that's basically a month of the year potentially missed for George Springer.
The other one is Merriweather that concerns a lot of people just because of how good he has looked and how often there is injuries in his past. Ben, is there any update on what we heard other than 10-day IL?
That's it for now. Yeah. And really, you know, it's a big loss. Like Merriweather, and I sometimes I wondered myself, like, if I was overreacting, but I couldn't help it. When I was watching this guy pitch against the Yankees, against the Angels, and not just those lineups, but the very best hitters of those lineups, Trout and Ohtani and Gleyber Torres and Gary Sanchez, and he was getting outs. Like, I was pretty bowled over by how good he looked early on.
One more that I want to talk about, because I feel like with Teoscar Hernandez now on the COVID list, he's 10 days as well, at least, that Rowdy Tellez is going to get more at-bats. And maybe I'm just drawing a conclusion that's not there, but it doesn't seem like they can just take him out of the lineup. He kind of needs to get going, and we've seen a little glimmer of that. And there was some, at least, worry on my side. Was there worry on your side on his start?
There's worry on my side because I don't think anyone knows what Rowdy Tellez is going to be. Yeah. I think it 2 or 3 years from now, if we have this conversation, I really don't know if he's going to be an impactful major league everyday player somewhere, or if he's going to be a guy that fizzles because he's just too streaky. He had one at bat today that convinced me that he's on the right path. Even the home run last night didn't, because it was a ball up in the zone, but it was 87, 88. Yeah. He struggles with high velocity up there, not just chasing it, but getting to it. He hit Loaisiga today, and he lined a ball up the middle, and it was like 96, 97. He changed his swing plane. He actually got to a spot that he could handle it. That's a great sign, hopefully, moving forward, because they're going to keep throwing him there.
All right, less than 2 minutes here, Benny. Given all the injuries, given what we've been talking about, 6-6 and 4-2 against the Yankees, that's not bad.
No, I think it's something to build on. I really do. And this is going to be an interesting stretch for this team, as it always is with the Blue Jays. There's always something to watch for, but I think they're in a decent spot. And when you look at Mats and you look at Ray, the way that they've pitched, this gives, I think, me and probably a lot of people watching this team some intrigue on the pitching front that, honestly, going into the season, I wasn't sure what to expect.
What are you looking for in the next couple of days, Joe?
It's just that consistency with the lineup. These guys, I felt even last week when there was doom and gloom, these guys are going to hit. I really do believe they're going to. I hope they keep rolling and get better before Springer and Teoscar come back, because once they come back, wow, if Teoscar can get going and Springer we know is going to, this lineup can be very deep.
Joe, thank you very much. Always appreciate you sticking around for us.
My pleasure.
Benny, thank you very much. Appreciate it. And looking forward to reading you on sportsnet.ca.
Anytime. Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Joe.
More Jays coming up. Kenny Reed's going to drop by. We'll talk about the Bluebirds after their big win over the Yankees in Dunedin. But after the break, Leaf fans are excited about Nick Foligno and what he can bring to the team. He's in quarantine, so he's got time for me. We will discuss him and his pop's time in Toronto. Coming up next, right here on Tim and Friends.
What a good pro Foligno has been over the years.
He is a playoff demon.
The shot, score! Foligno scores!
What a warrior!
He's got the skill, and he uses it. Here's Foligno, walks in! Foligno scores! What a spectacular goal by Nick Foligno. Oh, Nick Foligno is a creative player, and he is ultra creative on this play.
If you're trying to redefine a winning culture, that's the kind of player I want in my locker room.
Let's go all the way, boys, all the way here. I love you, baby. Great game. Oh, my God. Let's go. Boom!
It was one of the most talked about deals at the deadline, the one that brought the Toronto Maple Leafs another former captain and another second generation player to a market full of them, one of the newest members of the Leafs. Live from quarantine, it's Nick Foligno. Nick, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you. That was a nice intro.
nice to hear the good things about you. Listen, before we get to all the aspects that you bring to this team, I know that you knew you were in for the quarantine. So what was the one or two things that you had to have while in quarantine? And I'm sure the experience in the bubble influenced this, but what were the must-haves once you realized you were going back into the so-called bubble?
Well, I think... Thank God for technology, because the iPad is definitely a must-have. And I don't know, I'm not too picky. I need good food. So that's about it.
Good food and FaceTime the kids.
We're working towards that. I'm Italian, so it's good food's important.
Yeah, understood. I know with Pops playing in the show, there was some moving around, but he spent three seasons in Toronto. What do you remember most about those times?
Well, I mean, obviously their run. I remember my dad was living downtown in an apartment. So as kids, we thought that was the coolest thing. We actually stayed in Buffalo 1 year.
Yeah.
And we'd come up and see him in the apartment that he was in, and thought that was just the neatest experience. And then I think the following year, we actually lived in Luke Richardson's house. I think nice. He got traded away, and we moved into his place. So that was, went to school and everything. So that was pretty unique. And I think just obviously what stands now is just, you know, the passion of the fans and going on that run and being able to be a part of that and, live it kind of through my dad, was just unbelievable, you know, and something I think stuck with me all these years. And, what I'm most looking forward to going on a run here with Toronto and having that passion come back with the fans.
You know, it's funny, I'm a wee bit older than you, and I remember those times probably better than a 5 or 6 year old was, but I was still surprised, like, when you were dealt, how many fans just remembered back to those times. I even saw friend of the show, Dougie Gilmore, reach out on Twitter to welcome you to Toronto. Were you surprised at how much interaction you got based on your dad's time in Toronto?
Honestly, yeah, I was. I mean, I knew how much my dad cared about playing for the Leafs.
Yeah.
And I think it's a testament, even the short time, how many people remembered him. You know, he scored a big goal in the playoffs, but I think they just remembered the passion, obviously the helmet, and the passion that he played with. So I think it speaks volumes about him as a player and as a person, that the impact that he had. So it did surprise me a little bit, you know, the people that reached out, but it also was just an amazing feeling of how excited people are. And it got me excited. I said, it's amazing how you play 14 years in the league, and
yeah.
I just feel rejuvenated in a little way right now with just the excitement that I have to join this team, and I think that's going to really bode well for me and hopefully the hockey club.
All right, one more. I want to get to all that, but one more. Our social media accounts posted some old school viz. I know you mentioned the helmet. It had me reminiscing. I won't ask you if you have a Foligno leap in you, but any chance that you take a twirl with the old man's Northland bucket, say in a warm-up or something like that?
I don't know. I got to go dig it out of the... I don't know where it is.
That's a collector's
we'll
item
see.
Now.
Well, let's just say we'll see. I'm not gonna close the door on that, but I got to see if we still have one.
I don't know if it'll
turn to dust as soon as I put it on. I'm not sure.
I tried to get an old-school Gretzky Jofa online, and they're like $700. I don't know what the Northland would go for these days. So it might be tough.
I don't know. I think people are still using that as a strainer in their kitchen now.
Yeah, with the pasta. Understood. I know you had some say here and had become a huge part of the community in Columbus. What made you want to add another chapter in the book and come to the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, I think, you know, in honesty, I don't think I wanted it to happen. I think it just happened organically in that, yeah. You know, our team, unfortunately, just didn't do well this year. And when presented with the opportunity to continue to play for in the playoffs, I think that's anyone's dream. And especially, you know, if you played 14 years in the league, you realize how hard it is to get to.
Yeah.
And I really wanted that opportunity. I think with my contract lining up the way it did, and you know, the organization in Columbus allowing me to even have that conversation with them, I really appreciated it. And then the fact that, you know, there was teams interested, and one of them being Toronto, I was thrilled with. And you know, so I think just how it kind of came about, and how thrilled I am now to join such a great team and try and help this group. And you know, I think it's made it easier on me, knowing it's kind of a win-win for the organization in Columbus, and you know, for myself, and a chance that I get to join a really good team who believes in me and is excited about having me join them. And as much as I'm excited about joining this group and just trying to bring whatever I can to help this team win, and that's all I'm focused on. And it's just it's really exciting for me, and I can't wait to get around the guys, obviously.
Listen, I got two little ones at home, and I saw the pic on Twitter of you and your three packing up the car and sending Dad off. A great reminder in these times how it's not just a hockey deal. Like, there are families, there are friends that are involved. How tough was it to say goodbye?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, that's probably the hardest part for me of this whole situation, how thrilled I am, but not to have my family, you know, when I come home after a game or after practice and be there in the room. It's they're everything to me. You know, I think anyone you talk to, there's no secret how that's all I care about besides hockey. So, but knowing that, you know, they're safe and well in Columbus, and my wife is an incredible woman and can handle three kids, I'm sure she'll be freaking out in a week or so. but just knowing that they're set up there and they're able to continue their lives while I go chase my dream, and having that conversation with them, I think it just puts everything into perspective of this is an opportunity that I don't want to waste. You know, I'm taking time away from my family and joining a great team, and a team is taking a chance on me and believes in me. So all those things together made it kind of an easier decision to go and do this. And it's a sacrifice. And let's be honest, I mean, it's a sacrifice, but there's so many more people in the current state of the world that are making way more sacrifices than I am. So when you put that into perspective, I get to go play hockey. And you know, it's a short time that I'm away from my family, and you know, I thank God for that opportunity. And but I think about all the people that have been affected more by this pandemic than me. And if I get a chance to go play hockey because of it, then we'll make do. And I know my family's cheering me on from afar.
Well said. Well said. Nick Foligno of the Toronto Maple Leafs joining us here on Tim and Friends. We've seen others get moved on deadlines, and they try really hard, maybe even too much, to fill the role they think that they're supposed to fill. Now, we counted up on this Leafs team 12 buds that have worn a letter in the NHL, either C's or A's. Does that make the transition a little easier for you?
I think so. I mean, you know, it's funny. Maybe it's because I'm just a little bit older now, and you know, I'm coming in there just to help any way I can. You know, and I believe in myself, obviously, and what I can bring. But at the end of the day, I'm also excited to learn from some of these guys. You know, I got a chance to be around Joe Thornton, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, Morgan Riley, John Tavares. I mean, Jason Spezza, who I had the privilege of playing with in Ottawa. So you start getting to be around these guys that have been in the league a little while or have had success that they're having, and I'm just going to soak it all in. You know, it excites me in that regard, too, of what I can bring, but also what I can learn. Because I think I'd be naive to think that I'm just going to come in here and on this team and how great they are and just try to, you know, impact with whatever I can. I got to listen. I got to learn and you know, try to fit in wherever I can to help this group. That's all I'm trying to do. I think that's the most important thing. It's not I'm coming in here to save the day. This team doesn't need saving. This team needs just some help in certain aspects that I hope to provide. And, you know, I'm so thrilled to get that opportunity to help this team, which in turn will help me become a better player, become a better person, and have hopefully an opportunity to win a Stanley Cup.
Awesome. Some veterans that you've battled against are in that room. You saw a lot of these guys in the bubble last year. Is there a guy or two that you're glad you don't have to battle with, or are really excited to kind of play with because you know what they can do?
Well, I think you just look at all their offensive weapons, and it's always you have to be on point when you're on the ice against them. So that'll be nice to be on the other side of it where I can hopefully reap the benefits of being out there with them. But, you know, a guy like Wayne Simmonds, him and I have had some really good battles. You know, Columbus and Philly, for a lot of years, we didn't have a real good liking to each other. So I remember I don't think we've ever fought, but I just remember always going at him physically, and he's such an intimidating and imposing player, so it'll be nice to be out on the ice with him and be able to go do that to other guys. And, you know, and even a guy like Joe Thornton, I'm just so excited to be around him. You know, he's been in the game so long, and and has accomplished so much. And I'd love nothing more than to be able to go on a run and get him the cup. You know, he's somebody I admire and the way he's played and being able to impact the game. So it's amazing how many guys in that room that, you know, I just there's a storyline behind it of a lot of guys chasing that trophy. And if we can come together and do it for one another, it could be an unbelievable story.
All right, let's talk about that story. I got two quick ones for you here. I know you've heard it a couple of times since the deal, but a couple of years ago, back in the heat of battle, you talked about how they didn't defend well enough below the hash marks, this Leafs team. Have you noticed enough of a change in the way they defend below the hash marks that you feel like this could be a real extended run here?
I said that.
I read the headline.
Man, you can't hide from anything. No. You guys dig up everything.
I might have got 2020 or 2021 and just read the headline, but I saw the headline.
I see a difference in the team. You know, I've obviously haven't watched them. I've watched them of late, obviously, but just, you know, in playing them last year and knowing that we had to be at our absolute best in Columbus in order to beat them. And that was just defensive minded, be who we were, wait for our opportunities to capitalize and, you know, and allowed us to have success against a really good team and frustrate them a little bit. And, you know, I think they took a lot of that and learned from it. Even their other exits, you could, you know, hear them talking. I just feel like they're a team that's ripe for changing the narrative, changing the story. And I want to help be a part of that. And you know, I think you can just see the difference in some of the way some of the plays that they're making, how they're focusing on that aspect. And I think I've learned in my time how important that is to being successful in hockey. You know, and especially right. in the playoffs. You know, and so I see that. I saw the Tampa Bay Lightning and what they did in order to change after we swept them and how they brought in a more of a defensive-minded, grinding style of team that could complement, you know, their offensive weapons. So I'm excited to be part of that and to help where I can. And you can just see their mindsets already understanding of that. Because everyone said, you know, the levels go up and playoffs is a whole other level of grit and determination. And you have to have that and a mix of that. And I think with the weapons that they have already offensively and the people they've brought in to complement that, we can be a real dangerous team if we can put it all together.
Got it. Also, the producer whispered in my ear that we have the clip. I'll save you from the clip. We will not play the clip. We'll just move on.
Thanks a lot, producer.
I know it's not just your family, but a community that you're leaving behind in Columbus. And you've done a ton of work. It was evident in a tweet from the Nationwide Children's Hospital. But you also have the family charity that was started to honor your daughter who had to undergo 2 open-heart surgeries. We got some generous folks watching this. Before we let you go, tell us a bit about the Hearts playbook.
I appreciate you bringing it up. Obviously, that to me is you know, what it's all about at the end of the day. And you know, we're so fortunate to be in a position to hopefully inspire and help other people. And, you know, going through something so scary like our daughter, you know, having a heart disease when she was born. She was born with a congenital heart defect. You know, realizing how many people you have to lean on and, you know, the people that gave us a chance to be a family. We knew right away after we got through it that we'd want to do something. So we decided to start our own foundation. It's called the Hearts Playbook. And it's really just devoted to helping, you know, and continuing to raise awareness. And, you know, 1 in 4 children are born with congenital heart defects. A lot of people don't know that. And we just feel like there's so much more that can be learned and through research, there's so much out there. You know, our own story was a lot of word of mouth to find the right doctor that could save our daughter's life. So just trying to be that inspiration and you know, use our platform for good. So I really appreciate you bringing that up. It's something we're very proud of. It's new. We're kind of, you know, jumping into this with 2 feet, but it's something we care a lot about. Awesome. And want to make sure that we're giving back the way that people have given us a chance to have a family. So I appreciate you asking.
Awesome. And, you know, at this time, we're kind of realizing how important perspective is. And oftentimes it's also expensive. Perspective can be expensive, and it doesn't always have to be if you get it at the right spot. Heartsplaybook.com if you want to help out Nick and his family. Would expect nothing less than salt of the earth from somebody with Sudbury in their blood. Thank you very much for doing this, Nick. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Hopefully make Sudbury proud here now. Thanks a lot.
Not a problem, Nick Foligno. Big Nickel Country, kids. Remember they had the TV for the Pee-wee tournament, the Big Nickel tournament. Anyways, big win for the Flames last night in Toronto as they try to cling to their playoff hopes. Tonight, their first of five meetings with the Habs in the next 2 weeks. Can they do something? We'll examine next.
Jim McAuliffe and friends of the show.
Thank you very much, Chief Docs. Back here for another hour on Tim and Friends. Nice walk-off win for the Jays against the Yankees this afternoon. Bo, son of a Bichette, comes up big. We'll hit it again shortly in a flash. Also still to come, Mark Stein on the Raptors plus Kenny Reed in studio. There's a trophy beside me. And Elliot Friedman from CBC. Flames, Habs, Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. First of five matchups in the last 2 weeks. Is there hope? With more in tonight's game, we send it to Kyle Bukauskas in Montreal. Oh, Kyle.
Well, Tim, it really was a welcome sight this morning seeing Yoel Armia back on the ice with his teammates after that bout with COVID-19. He has been skating for about a week now and will officially come back in the lineup tonight versus the Calgary Flames. He spoke to the media earlier today for the first time since contracting the virus. He said he dealt with symptoms for the first 4 or 5 days or so. Really, the only thing was body aches. So I think all in all, he felt pretty fortunate that he wasn't dealing with anything more severe. And so he comes back at a pretty critical juncture of the Canadian season and the Flames for that matter. Tonight is the first of five meetings over the next 13 days between the two, and given where they are at in the North Division standings, this next stretch could very well determine whether or not Calgary has any chance of crawling into that fourth and final playoff spot at the end of the regular season. We know that Jake Allen is going for Montreal, Tim. I would expect Jacob Markstrom to start for the Flames after that overtime victory in Toronto last night.
Saw some guys on the ice. Appreciate it, as always, Kyle. Ben Chiarot was on the ice, and also a little bit of Carey Price. All right, time now to bring in more help for your humble narrator. As we turn to the Hour 2 co-host, yes, the juvenile champ from the 1990 championship at the Pictou Golf Club, and juvenile he can often be, but also the co-host of the evening edition of Sportsnet Central. And before you launch into one of your famous diatribes, Kenny, how great is it to have Ivanka Osmak back on Central?
It's all right.
Does she have a trophy that big?
No, but in her days, when she was youngster like that, she was modeling for the Byway.
Oh, really?
I'm dead serious.
Come on.
Ivanka used to be a model in Byway magazine. For those of you younger out there, Byway was kind of Canadian Kmart, I'd say. We had Kmart.
A little giant tiger-ish.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So we have pictures of that. Research department, you should dig that up. I know she's had them on her Instagram and Twitter accounts, but Ivanka Osmak was once upon a time a Byway model. All so, yeah, it's nice to have Ivanka back. It's good to be back in the swing of things, and we have a lot of fun. So it's good to be back together.
For those who are listening on radio or can't see the angles here, when I look at Ken's eyes, what intercepts it is the top of the trophy.
As
so every time I look at Ken Reed, this stupid trophy.
Well,
listen, I'm not tied with a trophy.
Yeah.
I'm going straight to the Habs and the Flames because Elliot Friedman is
Well, we are separated by 6 feet. Some sets use the plexiglass. We use the trophy.
We use the trophy. That is correct. Do the Calgary Flames have a shot? Brian Wilde tweeted out early that if the Habs stuck around earlier, if the Habs stuck around 500, the Flames would have to go 11-2-1.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, even if they sweep.
Oh, if they sweep, but that's not going to happen.
If they sweep two in Montreal over the weekend,
then
we're going to have
three
some
more.
All right, let's add another voice to the equation. Time now for 3 of 31, brought to you by the GMC Sierra AT4, the premium off-road pickup truck built for adventure. And for 3 of 31, we introduce Elliot Friedman. Elliot, you're pumping up this game. I'm saying, hey, you never know. And if there's a sweep in these two games in Montreal over the next 3 nights, it's going to get interesting here.
You know what you get for this, Tim?
What's that?
Rogers Employee of the Month. You know, first of all, let me just, this is terrible. My tie looks awful. There we go.
That's all right. We're used to it.
That's true. At this place, you are.
So, listen, I'm selling this because I think if you get this two-game sweep, you'll get people in Montreal a little bit nervous, but it has to be a two-game sweep in Montreal for the next three nights.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we are trying to sell entertainment here, and the from a purely entertainment point of view, races are better. Yes. It's not only a two-game sweep, but you're probably looking at a two-game sweep, and you want at least one of them in regulation if you're the Flames.
Right.
You know, if you're sitting there at 43 after this and the Canadians are at 47, does it really do you any good? If you're at 43 and the Canadians are at 45 or 46, that's obviously a lot better. No, you need to win. That's why I'm expecting that Markstrom will start tonight. I don't know that for sure. I'm expecting he will, but if I was the Calgary Flames, I don't think there's another move you can make but put your big free agent signing in there and start him in this game tonight.
Yeah, Timmy, I hate to break it to you, but, I mean, this is Sunday at the Masters. The Habs can literally shoot a 73 the rest of the way, and they're going to make it. They can tap in at the end.
Even with the 1 point, like, I didn't even think about
the one point's the killer. That's the killer.
Even if you get the 1 point, it looks like. I mean, listen, the jam is done unless they go on some crazy run here. And this is the start of what would have to be.
Elliot, speaking of trying to sell entertainment, I mean, the first two periods of that Flames-Leafs game last night, that was not fire wagon hockey. Is that how Calgary wants to play? I mean, have we figured out how they want to play under Daryl Sutter? Because we keep hearing, you know, more speed when you're in the other team's end, but that was just tough to watch at times, those first two periods.
Well, look, if you look at the Maple Leafs and you look at the Flames, how else would you play it right now?
Yeah, I agree. But
and that's not to say the Flames don't have talent, but I think if you try to trade chances with the Maple Leafs and you let them go up and down the ice, you know, that's not going to work for you.
Correct.
I think you have to – look, Daryl Sutter has a way he wants you to play. That's an unbelievable save. He wants you to dump it in. He wants you to knock their D off the puck, and he wants you to grind. And that's not – I still can't believe how good a save that is. That's not exactly the way Calgary was built to play, but that's the way he wants him to play. And against Toronto, that's the way you got to play if you're Calgary. I think tonight's going to be another grinding game. If you watched Montreal-Toronto on Monday, that's what the Canadians did to the Maple Leafs, too. They tried to slow them down, make it difficult for them to get their offense going through the neutral zones. And, you know, this one's going to be a bit of a plodding, grinding battle for every inch.
It's a pucks in deep kind of game, is what
you're
saying.
It's a pucks in. Daryl Sutter's a pucks in deep kind of coach. He's your favorite coach.
I can't believe that Kenny said that wasn't entertaining early when Milan Lucic not only
That was entertaining.
A wonderful pass, but he has a full-blown tilt with Sabourin.
Yeah, that was entertaining.
In his 1,000th career game, I think the Sportsnet stats crew came up with the idea, and he's the only guy in his 1,000th career game to get a 5-minute major for fighting.
No. The last guy to do it was Chris Neal. And it's funny because the list was something like Chris Neal, Shane Corson, and Jeff Cortnell. Jeff Cortnell. What's Jeff Cortnell doing on that list?
It's like the old Sesame Street song.
Yes.
You know, three of these things are kind of together. One of these things is not the
like
same.
Not like the other.
Yeah.
That's how the day is.
All right, I got to do something here, boys. I told you. I told both of you.
Yeah, you tell me. I know where you're going. I know
both,
where you're going.
You know where I'm going?
Sabres, right?
Sabourin. That's right.
Sabres.
We gotta go. I'm gonna go back in the vault, and I'm also gonna separate my shoulder, pat myself on the back. Let's go back, kids, to when I told these guys. If you don't protect these stars with the whistle, we'll have to find a way, and that brings the punchers back.
Oh. I just don't know if we'll ever see fighting go back up again, Tim. With everything we know now about concussions and things like that, I just don't think you're... I mean, there always will be some. The spontaneity of the game and the frustration of the game boils over at times, absolutely. But I don't think we're ever seeing it going back to the levels where it was at. We just know
I'm saying the Leafs are going to dress Scott Sabourin because they don't want to see Tavares and Matthews take any more beating.
Yes.
So, you know what? We just learned?
Much.
I thought you were going to talk about the Sabres breaking their losing streak.
You know what we just learned in this segment? We just learned in this segment that Tim and Friends is not really about Tim and Ken Reed or Tim and Donovan Bennett or Tim whoever Tim brings.
Wherever I can get
Tim
them,
and Friends is Tim and the video that makes him look smart.
Yeah, exactly.
I got one. I got one, my friend.
That was pretty good, though. You know what I liked last night, too, is how they dropped the gloves first and then the refs let them pick them up. Because usually they might throw you a 10 for that, dropping the gloves before the whistle, and the refs are like,
We know you're going to do it. Just put the gloves back on. We'll drop the puck and have a go.
Listen, are you good with that? Like, I thought there would be more people that were upset with the Leafs dressing a guy that they're not going to use very often to go fight a guy in his 1,000th career game.
Maybe it was a big night.
Hold on
a
second.
Whoa, you go ahead.
I don't think they dressed him to go fight Lucic in his 1,000th game.
Correct, Elliot. Correct.
Yeah, like, they sent him out to fight Lucic, period, and he just happened to be sent out to fight Lucic.
When has he played?
He asked Lucic, like, if you listen
totally
to the post game last night,
Lucic
he asked Lucic to do it, but he wasn't dressed for the specific reason to go fight Lucic.
Are you kidding me? We saw the hit from behind on Matthews. Like, that was as planned as they come. That was a response for a hit from behind from a previous game against Matthews.
Well, you should be trying to get a guy for a hit from behind for Matthews.
I agree with it. I said that on the show. Did you see the vault?
Maybe there wasn't a huge outrage last night because there was some sort of nerds and geek conference going on that we didn't know about. Who knows? I thought it was great. I loved it.
But you know what it is. Don't act like you don't know what it is.
I know
Tim,
what it is.
Tim, I think the other thing to realize here is Spets was out of the lineup, and it's not as if they're teaming with bodies.
See?
Come on. Is that where you're...
Well, put it this way. I'm selling the Flames.
You can sell this to me.
If you're the Leafs...
I'm okay with it.
If you're the Leafs and the last time you played the Flames...
Salmon hasn't played this year.
Lucic does whatever he wants, right? If you're the Leafs and you're going, okay, so we got to put a roster together. Should we put in someone who may take away from Lucic doing whatever he wants, or should we just let Lucic do whatever he wants?
I'm with you. I said it. I said it was going to happen. I think you.
Well, I know, but you're not saying he had to go fight him. He's the nuclear deterrent.
All right, Friege, I want to move on to, because I don't know if we'll agree on this, and I don't know if we need to agree.
Well, you're right because you have the video evidence anyway.
But there's a situation brewing, and I know it's brand new, so I'm putting you on the spot. But I
Vancouver?
Just saw that there was we're going to get to the Vancouver Sound a little later on. Mm-hmm. There's a Marley situation with COVID.
Yeah.
And this is brand new too, but given how close they are to the Leafs, are there any concerns with the Leafs?
I think we're still trying to determine that.
Okay. Okay. And as for Vancouver, what they're being asked of, and listen, we'll figure this out as it goes along. The Marlies have been shut down through next Wednesday because of a COVID situation. We've seen one, I guess Robertson is going on the COVID list for the Leafs, and that's the one kind of guy that might see the lineup for the Leafs. We'll figure it out a little later.
Well, I think that's he was a Marley. There's a COVID situation with the Marlies, so they're putting him in isolation right now. They put him on the COVID list. I think the reason everybody's saying we're still trying to get to the bottom of it, Tim, is because I just don't think they know the answers yet. I think everybody hopes not, but they don't know the answers yet.
Okay, so let's just talk about Vancouver quickly because I know you got to go. JT Miller had some pretty passionate words that we're going to pass along to you as soon as we can turn them around. But what's being asked of Vancouver is a hell of a lot, is it not?
I don't – if you take a look at it, my question is – is it really reasonable to ask them to play this quickly? Mm-hmm. You know, 9 players came off the COVID list today. 7 still remain. There's a few of them. They're supposed to play Friday against Edmonton. I think there's 3 players that can't come off by then. So there's a chance they could be asked to play with a short lineup. That I don't get. And I understand there was a conversation about whether or not the Utica guys should be brought up. And there was pushback against that because those players also haven't played a ton of games because there was a 3-plus week COVID shutdown there too. So, you know, in terms of the number of games and the number of days, that's been done around the league this year. The Canucks aren't the first team to be in a 19-31 schedule. That's happened, although I definitely concede it's difficult. What I think the issue that those players have is, are they being asked to do something too quickly? And on that one, I do think they have a very legitimate question.
We'll see. Friday is the schedule against Edmonton. Friege, no matter whether we agree, no matter if someone has video evidence that they're right, we always appreciate when you join us.
Tim and Friends with Ken Reed, Donovan Bennett, and the video that proves me correct.
Well, if we've learned anything over the last few years, even if you have video evidence and audio evidence, it doesn't really mean it happened or it's true.
That's true, too. Friege, be well, and if you get anything, let us know, and we'll put it up on Twitter, and we'll show our audience so that they know.
All right, guys. Have a great night.
Thanks, buddy.
There's Elliot Friedman ahead of the Flames and the Habs on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. Kenny, I've been told that we have the audio from JT Miller. Now, again, remember, not only are they scheduled to play on Friday, but they're coming off of what seemed to be a pretty strong strain of COVID-19. And I know Friedman said we've seen other teams play the 19 games in 31 days.
These guys are sick, though. What's left in the tank? What's in there, right?
Right. And that's the part of this that I find really, really interesting. So here's JT Miller, part of a Canucks availability today for the first time since they got hit by this pretty strong strain of COVID-19.
Yeah, I don't really feel ready at all, if I'm being completely honest. Trying to use a couple skates here to get my hockey senses back. The legs aren't going to be there immediately, obviously, to expect pretty much our entire team to be ready to play. And one practice in a pregame skate is a little bit hard to comprehend. You know, skating a couple times and, you know, my lungs are screaming and definitely not in game shape at all right now from sitting around and not doing much. And I couldn't imagine what these guys are going to have to go through to get back and be ready to play at a high level against, you know, we're playing two of the best players in the entire world on Friday and another one of the best teams in the league on Saturday. So it's, I never thought I'd be in this scenario in my career. It's going to be a start of a really long stretch, short but hard stretch at the end of the year here. So a reaction, I don't know. It's not ideal, obviously, for anybody, but we have a job to do, I guess, and I don't know.
You know, earlier today I was on Vancouver Calgary radio, and I was saying I don't feel comfortable with the situation, but I also know what it's about. Like, I know it's about money.
It's about money, yeah.
And a lot of things that we've been dealing with over the last little while are about money. But when you see JT Miller speaking, it hits at a different level.
I admire him for saying that, too, because all I want in an interview is guys to be honest. And there's probably going to be people that say, oh, you're getting paid, JT, get out there. No. These guys are not at 100%. It's dangerous too, right? I mean, hopefully guys are, I'm sure other teams are going to give the old, hey, heads up if they're coming in for a hit or maybe shy off a hit, because this is dangerous for these guys. And yeah, it's usually follow the money. That's a lot to ask of a group of guys who, by all accounts, were hit very hard by this.
I was on the air, so I didn't see it, but a producer is telling me right now that it was 16 minutes of passionate talk from JT Miller. And I had this from Tom Westerholm, who covers the NBA, earlier today. And in fact, I sent it to our team. Jason Tatum, who plays for the Boston Celtics, who is among the better young players in the league, says that he takes an inhaler now before games after COVID. He never did before. And I'm not saying that it's permanent. The saying is he's still trying to get his lungs back from having COVID. And you see with the Toronto Raptors, they're in a similar
situation. Look what Fred VanVleet's been saying.
Yeah.
You know?
He's saying that we don't have the legs in, you know, the third quarter and the fourth quarter. And he's not a BSer.
No.
Like, he's the antithesis of a guy who would spew BS.
Yeah, I man, this is I'd say a season like no other, but last year was weird too. So you don't want to hurt anyone's competitive advantage or disadvantage, but I just see a lot of, you know, I don't want to say teams are going to let up against them as far as putting pucks in the net, but as far as smoking a guy in the corner, might be a little, you know, you always hear the old timers say you'd give the guy a heads up if you're coming down the ice back in Tom's day.
Right.
So maybe we'll be seeing a bit of that.
Yeah, and don't forget this the next time a player says there's no loyalty or there's, you know, it's about money or I'm holding out for money or I'm not going to do something. When you scream, oh, yeah, greedy players, just remember 19 games in 31 days.
Yeah, and there's a window for these guys when they get paid, how they make their money. It's real.
Will you stick around, Kenny?
I'm contractually obligated for another 41 minutes, so yes.
Is that turning into a mullet?
I think it's more of a Junior B flow, 1995 mullet. It's the party all over. I feel like kind of like Ryan Smith in 2002.
Right.
If we could look up some Ryan Smith from 2002. I also might take a time machine and try out for a Junior B team in 1996, I think. But it's not really 1991 mullet, though.
And it's not quite Bo with the flow.
No, it's not Bo with the flow.
But when we come back, a little Bo with the flow.
Bo knows flow.
Two home runs, including the walk-off winner against the Yankees. We'll talk hockey. We'll talk Jays with Kenny Reed. Next, right here on Tim Friends and Video That Makes Me Look Right. Welcome back to Tim and Friends. In case you missed the Jays and the Yankees, which was played at
City Ballpark.
TJ Zoik got the start in place of Ross Stripling. He had forearm tightness, another to the IL. Second batter he faced, Aaron Judge, line drive shot. First to two in the game for Judge was 1-0 Yankees. Bottom two, Alejandro Kirk, 0-for-13 on the season. Not anymore, Botch. Took Corey Kluber deep. It's 2-1 Jays. Bottom three, Bo Bichette. He's down with OFP. Opposite field power. 11-game hitting streak. Jays lead 3-1, but that would dissipate. Now 3-2. Josh Palacios thought this Gleyber Torres shot would hit the wall. He let it bounce behind him, put runners at second and third, and Gio Urshela would cash him. Yankees take a 4-3 lead on the misplayed ball. That's it for Zoik. Four earned, four hits, four innings. Bottom six, bases loaded. Jonathan Loaisiga, wild pitch. Rowdy Tellez scampers home. I didn't think I'd ever say that. Tied at four. Bottom of the ninth, still tied at four. Bo Bichette.
Breaking ball high in the air. Hicks ranging back at the wall, at the track. Get out of here. God, a walk-off home run for Bo Bichette. Have a day, Bo.
As I said earlier, son of a Bichette. Literally, Dante's son, the game winner. And with all the IL talk, 4-2 versus the Yankees, 6-6 overall, not all that bad.
Not bad at all. I was driving in when I heard the call of the walk-off, and from Buck, I didn't think he thought it was gone, but that ball, as we've seen in Dunedin, they just keep going, going, going.
Just the swing, and he did it twice in this game where he's, it looks like he's just trying to send something the other way, and he is.
He's sending it, yeah. It's that 2 out of 3 from the Yanks when your starter goes down a few minutes before the ball game, that's not bad at all.
It's early, but the Yankees are at the bottom of the division, and they're done. The Red Sox keep winning. They started 0-3. They've now won 8 in a row. They're in the middle of a double dip with the Twins right now. Jesse, we've had some running themes on today's show, and I hear the people at Tim and Friends on Twitter, Jesse Rubinoff, by the way, our digital producer, if you don't know, now you know. It seems like people are contributing to the program today.
Yeah, this actually is from the Tim and Friends team, but there was a lot of talk about Nick Foligno's helmet, and he didn't completely rule out maybe wearing it in a warm-up when you spoke to him earlier in the show. So our team put together a little Photoshop of his dad's helmet on top.
Beautiful. You got to wear the Northland. I was at a golf tournament, at Dale Hawerchuk's golf tournament, and Nick's dad, Mike, was a guest, and Butch Goring was a guest as well. And I said, boys, I got to get my picture between the both of you. They said, why us? I go, two of the best buckets in NHL history. I mean, the snaps in the Northland, you can't beat that.
Without a bat. And I saw you. You have the Jofa, the old school Jofa. So earlier in the show.
Yeah, I tweeted that in, but Jesse didn't care.
Nope, I have it.
Yes!
Right here, actually.
Because Ryan Leslie said, Kenry, Jofa, Jofa. It's true.
It is true. And not only that, when I saw you wearing the Jofa.
Mm-hmm. Zoom in, by the way, Jesse, see how tough I look. Watch my nose.
I went online to try and buy one of
them. Yeah, they're expensive.
They're super expensive. Yeah, they're like 600 bones. And I mentioned it to Nick Foligno, and one of the Timmins citizens, T-Dams, wrote in and said, hey, Tim, just found a Northland bucket online.
Yeah.
Guess how much?
It's around $1,000. I tried to buy one.
$999.
Yeah, it's probably the one I tried to buy.
For the Northland bucket.
You can get the Jofa Gretzky for like $250 if you look around. I got a Klima for $60. So I got the Klima bucket too, yeah. You come through me, buddy. I'll hook you up.
I need the Jofa.
So when,
like, if I'm coaching my kids and you got, like, you now have to wear a helmet.
Can't go in an XL7, by the way, which also are a little pricey.
But I played on a team, Leaside Kings, who wore the XL7.
Pictou Academy Pitbulls. Yeah. Exactly. Pictou County did come up. Quickly, Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada in Kenora a few years ago.
Yeah.
We play our game. All the alumni from their senior team, the Kenora Thistles, come out. All these guys played in 81, 82, and I go out my Jofa because I'm, you know, super cool. Everybody had an old red Gretzky Jofa. That's what team wore, so that was super cool.
Awesome. You got any more for us?
Yeah, it turns out Ivanka is watching or listening to the show because when Ken referenced the byway modeling, Ivanka has tweeted out a picture.
Look at that.
Of there the byway is. Modeling.
Ivanka Osmak byway model.
Talking facts.
Yeah.
Jesse doesn't know how to zoom in. We already figured that out on the last one, so I won't ask him to zoom in.
She was paid in KTEL windbreakers and fanny packs.
If you don't do the full picture and you go back to the original tweet and you click on the picture in the original tweet, it'll blow up just the picture.
Thanks, nerd.
We'll get it sorted.
Any other geek advice there, McCalla?
I've been doing it for years on this show, and no one knew how tough it was to host a show and pull up these pictures for everybody. But now Jesse's learning.
Yeah, so Ivanka, think good. Of Ivanka's career arc, model to sitting with me.
Oh,
it's gone down.
Poor girl. You want to stay here for a little while?
Hey, bud, you asked me that last segment. I got 31 minutes to go.
How much are we paying you for this?
Nothing.
Time now for Hockey Central. Someone else that I'm waiting to join the show, Jeff Merrick and the panel.
He wants to get paid.
We'll continue on Sportsnet 360, 590 The Fan. I'm telling you, I'm paying you with alcohol, okay?
Where is it?
Soon. Very, very soon. Mark Stein joining us. We'll talk Raptors, tanking, back in 60 seconds, Tim and friends. And Hockey Central with Merrick. Welcome back to Tim and Friends. After losing to the Hawks last night, Raptors back at it tonight against DeMar DeRozan and the Spurs. But once again, the Raps will be extremely shorthanded. Kyle Lowry will rest for the second night.
Tanking.
Yeah. Fred VanVleet apparently healthy, but serves as one game suspension tonight, while Gary Trent Jr., DeAndre Bembry, Jalen Harris, all out with injuries. Nick Nurse asked how he'll deal with all of these missing guards.
Play big. Probably play big a lot. I think you'll see us as big as ever tonight at times. So I'm gonna start Kem tonight, so it gives me a chance to sub Freddie a little bit more directly for him. Okay. So they can kind of play the five, and we don't really have much choice about the other spots to be big, you know, with Pascal, OG, Chris, Yuta. Yeah.
Okay, two things. One, scrumtralescent old school Dr. J t-shirt being worn by Nick Nurse in his pregame availability. And two, this entire year they have talked about playing small.
Mm-hmm.
And now here we are.
And
he's got to play big with Freddie Gillespie, by the way, if you wondered who that Freddie was.
And three, if we took a time machine back 3 years ago, I'd be excited to talk about the Raptors. But I tank.
I feel like the tank is a little bit disrespectful for what they have gone through this year. But if they're saying uncle on this season, I'm all for it. Like, we just talked about.
Because I know you're big on the culture thing you were talking about.
Well, we just talked about what the Vancouver Canucks are going to have to go through. The Raptors have already gone through it.
So just get it over with.
And if they're looking at this and saying, it's Tampa, we're not even in front of our home fans, we can't even keep healthy bodies on the floor, we're playing big when our team doesn't really have any bigs, and the ones that are big we just brought in the last week, and they say that they want to say uncle, I'm good with it. Let's bring a third voice into the equation, and that voice is of the New York Times, Mark Stein, a regular here on Sportsnet. Mark, thanks for doing this. Really appreciate the time.
Always good to be with you guys.
I'm not big, and Ken knows this, on the tank when you have a culture as good as the Raptors have had for the last three or so years. But if ever there was a season where someone tapping made me feel okay with it, is this the year for the Raptors in Tampa with all they've had to deal with?
I think that's the general feel, the general consensus, that because
with the circumstances where they are, the fans are nowhere near them, can't get near them, you know, but it's kind of also happening on its own with the health. I mean, just the health of so many key guys is messed up that it's happening whether they want it to or not.
It's kind of like an organic tank. I mean, you always say, oh, it's the players are going to play as hard as they can. And, well, they will, obviously. But, I mean, it in a way, Mark, does it almost make it easier? I don't want to say to tank, but to dwindle away as the season fades?
I don't think it's easy. I think because of what these guys have done and how competitive of a group it is, I'm sure it's not fun for them. I'm sure Nick Nurse is miserable. I mean, obviously, they went out and they signed Birch, so that was kind of a signal that, you know, they're still trying to compete. You know, why would you even try to get in the buyout market if you're not trying to still be competitive? But it's a weird dynamic for sure. And I think they've also kind of built up so much equity with the fans that, I mean, are Raptors fans really going to be upset if that's the route they're going? I don't think so.
No, they're not upset. The one thing that I wonder about is, listen, it's Malachi Flynn or bust, and we saw that last night, played a lot of minutes for this team. Actually, looked really good in the fourth quarter, but when Kyle Lowry is listed as rest and you don't have many healthy bodies out there, I know they can't talk about this, but I kind of hope that they may have wink, wink, nudge, nudged Kyle Lowry to a manageable deal. Otherwise, there's a part of the fan base that's going to get louder about why didn't they trade him?
Yeah, no question. It is weird. I mean, obviously, Kyle's injury situation has been a bit bizarre. And, you know, resting on both ends of a back-to-back, you don't typically see that. Usually you're going to play one rest or rest to play. So no question, Kyle's situation and his future is top of mind. You know, how the Raptors are going to handle his future is a massive question, I think, around the league, really, because they run the risk of losing him for nothing.
Yeah, when I see rest on back-to-back nights, that's just weird. Is that, I mean, if that doesn't tell you what the organization's up to, does anything really? I mean, that, like, I think to the common fan, that's just like, okay, tank, on with it, whatever. He's been banged up, but I mean, come on, rest on two nights in a row?
Yeah, I mean, look, people are looking at it and noticing and surprised. I don't think there's any question. I mean, no. Once this team got back to 500, I think everybody thought, okay, they're going to make a playoff drive now. I mean, nobody expected the bottom to fall out the way it is. But then you see the injury list today, and they've got no players. I mean, again, it's kind of happening on its own.
The organic tank happening in Tampa/Toronto. Mark Stein joining us here on Tim and Friends with Kenny Reed. We showed video of Kyle Lowry against the Denver Nuggets, and my mind couldn't help but go back to the injury to Jamal Murray. Devastating for Canada basketball as they go into an Olympic year, presumably, and, of course, to the Denver Nuggets, who added at the deadline. And, Mark, I don't know if I've seen him play better than he was playing just before this injury.
Awful to watch. I mean, I was watching it in real time. Just gutting, just one of those that just makes you sick. I mean, you see the footage there, it just makes you sick to have to watch it and go through it. And especially when a team like Denver that rolls the dice and makes an aggressive move and they're, you know, trying to go for it. I mean, the Nuggets have always kind of been seen as this conservative team, and they make this huge trade to bring in Gordon. They win their first 8 games with Gordon, and you really think, wow, they're going to compete, they're going to take off. And it's devastating. I mean, and, you know, the love that was shown to Jamal Murray, a lot of people are in this guy's corner. You know, he had a breakout in the bubble. I mean, he's, you know, arguably Canada's best player, and there was all these concerns. Well, will we get him back for the Olympic qualifier? Will Denver's season go too long? And now to not even have that option, just gutting.
Yeah, it's a tough break all around. The one thing, and listen, I love the outpouring of support, and if there's a guy with the work ethic to come back, as I said on yesterday's show, this is the dude. However, Josh Hart was talking about the schedule And as you look at the NBA's injury list, is the Players Association a little concerned or going to voice their concern on how tight the schedule is and maybe how quickly you start next season? Like, I just wonder with all of these injuries if we might not have a prolonged conversation on the horizon.
I mean, look, they did the schedule this way to get back on track for next season, to get next season back on its more standard calendar. So I think next season's going to start late September, early October, just as the league intended. And a lot of teams are talking about it. A lot of teams are upset by it. A lot of teams are deeply worried about the situation. They're very uncomfortable. And I talked to numerous teams, and they're all convinced. And almost every team I talk to will say that the density of games, the travel demands, the waking up every morning for testing has just put such a strain on players. Every team you talk to is convinced that this has raised injury risk. And, you know, it's just been so many top name guys this year. I mean, if you go through the top eight, I just wrote this today, you go through the top eight, and outside of Utah and Phoenix, every, you know, the teams with the eight best records are all dealing with major, major injuries.
Yeah, it's not coincidence either. I mean, as a fan, I've always been kind of one of those, you know, you're getting paid, suck it up guys. But, Mark, a few moments ago, we heard from JT Miller and the Vancouver Canucks. They want to play them to play on Friday, and a bunch of guys are coming off COVID. But then you see all these stars in the NBA that are going down. You see Jamal Murray's injury, and I mean, it looked like a routine play until you see that angle from the end of the court, and you're like, oh, man. I mean, for me, for the first time in a long time, I'm actually seeing sympathy from fans for what these players go through, because usually a lot of us are like, whatever, you're a millionaire, suck it up. But to me, it's really hitting home to see the number of players going down.
I'm telling you, when you talk to people in the NBA, they what we underestimate is the testing, the rigors of the testing, and waking up every day in the 8 o'clock hour, driving in when you're at home. It's much easier when you're on the road and you're in the hotel and you can just go test. I mean, it's so much more difficult when you're in your home market and you've got to go in early, test, go back home, try to rest. I mean, again, nobody's going to feel sorry for professional athletes because of the dollars involved, but this is a major, major grind, I promise you.
I know you brought up the Canada qualification for the Olympics, and you had written a story. We tweeted it out from our Twitter account. We'll do it again, but an interesting story. We don't have a ton of time here, but an interesting story about how Canada got the court for Victoria.
Really interesting that, you know, this Victoria organizing committee, you know, I don't have to educate you guys on the history of the lucky loony. They didn't just want to do a lucky loony. They said, let's get a court to be the lucky loony. And so they went after the floor upon which the Raptors clinched the 2019 championship. They spent $270K to get it, and it took an extra $20K to get all the pieces, because after they received the floor, they found out that the center panels were missing and they had been sent a different center court. They're like, no, we need the actual court upon which the Raptors was, you know, to them, to this organizing committee, it is the most important floor in Canadian basketball history. And they put up a lot of money, got the floor. From what I'm told, they're going to unveil it soon in Victoria, and they're going to paint it with the FIBA painting and international markings. And when Canada tries to qualify against Greece and Turkey and the rest of that 16 field, they're hoping that there is some magic dust still on this floor. I guess we'll find out. And obviously, look, we don't know what kind of team Canada is going to be able to field. I mean, that's a massive question mark. How good is the team going to be that they can put on the floor? And you already can rule out Jamal Murray. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is dealing with plantar fasciitis right now. So Canada has more than 12 NBA players, but there are question marks already around, you know, no Murray. What about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? And Andrew Wiggins hasn't played since 2015 for the national team. So they're going to, you know, they're looking for any edge they can find. And, you know, I guess critics could say, this is ridiculous. Why are you putting so much stock in superstition? But I found it an interesting and
and pretty ambitious effort to go out and get that court.
I love it.
Those are the stories I love. That's fantastic. As a collector, as a sports romantic, as a geek, that's the kind of story I absolutely love. That's fantastic.
Lou Dort's one of those guys that could play for Canada. We'll have more on him in a flash. And he was
maybe he's the new go-to guy.
Yeah, maybe he is the new go-to guy. We'll have more on him in just a flash. Mark, always appreciate you stopping by. We'll retweet that story so people who want to know more about it can read it from Mark Stein, New York Times. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Mark.
I need all the help I can get. Thanks, guys.
There's Mark. It's a great story and how
I love
they
that
went
kind of
back
stuff.
For more, too, right? Like, it was what they got was, okay, kind of
the floor, missing more. The centerpiece. Yeah.
All right, here's more on Canada basketball. And listen, if you're a Canadian basketball fan, you're cheering for the Bucks to do really well. Because that means that Giannis might not be available for Greece.
I see where you're going. Okay.
In qualification. So if the Raptors are out, I got a feeling a lot of Canadian basketball fans are all of a sudden.
Go Bucks.
After a terrible Tuesday morning for Canada basketball, Montreal's Lou Dort provided some much-needed positivity last night, scoring a career-high 42 in the Thunder's loss to the Jazz. 21-year-old had 18 points in the first quarter, single-handedly outscored an entire Jazz team for almost the whole quarter, and this is a really good defensive team. He made a career-high 7 three-pointers, added 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 4 steals. Only one player in franchise history has scored more points in a game before his 22nd birthday. The dude's name? Kevin Durant.
I knew that because it was in the prompter, and I did the highlights last night.
It's been a remarkable rise for Dort, who entered the league last season undrafted free agent, falling down draft boards despite an outstanding freshman season at Arizona State. The main knock was that he couldn't hit the three.
Hit him last night.
Yes, he did. His playing time was limited early in his rookie season, but by the end of the year, he had cracked the starting lineup with his defense. He became a defensive stopper, and when the Thunder went 16-5 in the games Dort started, he started to gain a lot of attention. And then the job that he did guarding James Harden had a lot of people thinking that this guy could be a lot more. And his first real offensive breakout game came in Game 7 of that series when he scored 30, the most ever for an undrafted rookie in a Game 7, third most of any rookie. And he is now on the best deal in the NBA, 4 years, $5.4 million. Not per year. That's the total.
Bargain.
Yeah, absolute bargain. Initially, only the first year was guaranteed, Kenny, but the team has since said, all right, we'll guarantee the next 2 years it might be the best bargain in the league, 1.5 a year. Deal tops out at 1.9 in 2 years. What is it about Montreal, Kenny? You got Dort. You got Chris Boucher.
I was thinking of other things, but if you want to talk on the basketball front.
Right. An interesting story around the getting of the basketball court, but what a great story Lou Dort has become.
Hey, and as a broadcaster, I love guys with two-syllable names. Lou Dort, that's easy. When I have to go Lou Gehntz Dort, I screw it up, so I just go Lou Dort.
Yeah, why would you? Why would you add more?
Favorite hockey player of all time? John Sim. Nice and easy.
John. Where's John Sim from?
I can't say it because it's over on the board there.
Sorry.
You keep saying, will it come up today?
Well, you've already said it once.
I said town of, but there it is. Will it come up today?
So there's Pictou County come up today? Where's John Sim from?
Pictou County. There you go. The pride of Pictou County.
Last call is next.
We'll Mike Smith, Pictou County.
Jesse Rubinoff.
That's Bubbles, eh? That's a two-syllable name.
Where's Colin White from?
Pictou County. Three-syllable name, though.
Oh, that's too tough for you, Colin White?
Yeah.
Tim and Friends continues next.
What about Joey McDonald?
Tim and Friends, and that always means Kenny Reed, usually on a Wednesday. I shouldn't say always because I'm being presumptuous. We thank you for joining us each and every Wednesday.
Oh, when demand gets really high for me, I'm going to hold out.
Okay,
so,
good.
You know, just plan on it.
Now I understand, given what we've gone through today. Jesse Rubinoff joins us for Last Call, and I've heard we've got good-ish.
Yeah, it's good. Right. Some of them are good. But we'll let the viewers decide, but let's rifle through some. Alex Rodriguez set to become part owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves. And news broke over the weekend that A-Rod and business partner Mark Lohr are purchasing the team for $1.5 billion. T-Wolves star, rookie, and number one overall pick Anthony Edwards was asked about the new owner following yesterday's loss to the Nets.
Do you have any thoughts about
him? Are you an A-Rod fan at all growing up or anything like that? What you think about what he might bring to the team?
A fan? What do you mean? Like, who is he?
The baseball player? Alex Rodriguez?
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Okay.
I know he's going to be the owner, but I don't know about baseball.
Yeah, so as you can imagine, that clip went viral, and afterwards, A-Rod introduced himself to Edwards on Instagram. Edwards was just 15 years old when A-Rod retired, so Ken, does he get a pass for not knowing who his new boss is?
Absolutely. Not everyone has to know everything. When I heard that Anthony Edwards didn't know who Alex Rodriguez was, I thought they were talking about the guy from Revenge of the Nerds. I didn't know they were talking about a basketball player. That's Anthony Edwards to me is that guy from Revenge of the Nerds and ER. So I didn't know who Anthony Edwards was, and he didn't know who A-Rod was. Not everybody has to know everything. He's fine.
Get to know Anthony Edwards because he's averaging like 24 a game in the last little while.
His name will come up the teleprompter one night. I'll get it right.
Odds on rookie of the year.
He is ridiculous.
You should get a top shot of him.
They're hard to get now, Ken. Those are pricey.
This is the crazy thing about this is there's video out there of him bragging about what a good baseball player.
Yeah, that's
player.
The weird yeah. part. Yeah.
We have it. Let's go to it right now. Yeah.
I used to play baseball when I was young. Yeah, it'd be hot.
Really? How good a baseball player were you?
I could have went to the MLB.
MLB?
Yeah.
I am not surprised.
I'm serious, though. You think I'm joking. I'm serious.
No, I love your confidence. What positions did you play?
I played pitcher, shortstop, third base, and center field.
Those are the prime positions.
That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah, you were the best player on your team.
Is that now we talking.
You could hit the ball.
But I was 4th, 5th hitter. You know what that means.
Cleanup. Yeah.
Straight cleanup on aisle 3. Come get it.
Glasswares. I love his confidence, too.
He also transcended the Rubicon and flew to the moon. The guy can do anything. I wish I had confidence like that.
I love that. He's got a great personality.
He's great in front of the mic.
That's good stuff.
Staying with basketball, Atlanta Hawks guard Trae Young did not play in last night's win over the Raptors, but he was in attendance in Tampa. It was hard to miss. Wearing this McDonald's-themed outfit, Young tweeted pics of himself with the caption, "I'm loving it." So... there's right beside Ronald McDonald, who wore it better to me.
They are also, it's also the old school colors of the Atlanta Hawks, right?
I hope he's getting paid.
Yeah, but he does have.
I know
like,
there
the
are some arches. There are some arches. I'm with Kenny.
I hope he's getting paid.
I hope he's getting.
And
paid.
And if he's not getting paid, he'll get an endorsement deal out of it. So he's a smart guy.
Yeah,
smart
guy. Whatever it is, he's about to get paid by McDonald's.
Yeah. Yeah. I would think so. Staying with basketball.
Otherwise, why do you dress like Ronald McDonald?
It was a ridiculous look. It's just a ridiculous look.
I guarantee you he puts money in his pocket because
there'll be money made off that.
Yeah. Huge matchup tonight between the Sixers and Nets, who are currently tied for first in the East. Brooklyn will be without James Harden, Kevin Durant, Blake Griffin, and LaMarcus Aldridge.
What, they're tanking now?
Durant recently returned from a hamstring injury, played 27 minutes yesterday against the T-Wolves, and said his status for today would be determined by how his body recovered. Today it was announced that he was out. And let's just say that did not sit well with Chris Mad Dog Russo.
What?
You know what, Jordan Madou? My God almighty! You couldn't rip that uniform off him! That's basketball! That's what he would do! He'd freaking play! How about Paul Silas? How about Havlicek? How about Havlicek? We had 8 miles every game. Havel played from 1963 to 1979. 16 freaking years. Every single game. You think Havlicek's taking a night off? Havlicek! Twice the player that any of these guys are. You know how great Havlicek was? It makes me sick.
Brooklyn's good. Relax. They're one of the best teams in the league.
When was the last time, Kenny, you got that worked up?
45 minutes ago when I came in here.
when I suggested that Scott Sabrum was dressed to fight Milan Lucic in his 1,000th career game. Any suspendable offense.
Any suspendable offense in the NHL. Yeah, I get a little Hulk Hogan.
Or whenever someone goes crazy about whether or not a fight should be shown in the highlights.
Yes.
By the way.
Oh, yeah. I go crazy when if there's a fight and it's good, I'm like, put it in the highlights.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse at the end of the night. I find that there was a good tilt that didn't make the highlights.
Sabrin and Lucic were in the highlight pack last night.
Yeah, they were. So was that Miller fight in Boston. That was a beauty. That was a good tilt.
One more. We're officially 100 days away from the opening ceremony of the Tokyo Olympics. CBC Olympics posed the question, who should be Canada's flag bearer?
Stop. This is easy.
A lot of options. Who's your answer?
Christine Sinclair.
Done. There you have it.
Christine Sinclair is the maybe the greatest women's soccer player of all time. She's done it at the Olympics. She was robbed of what could have been a gold medal by terrible officiating in an Olympics. Christine Sinclair should be the flag bearer.
Ballroom dancing is an event now, right? I'm going to go with Sid Sixero for ballroom dancing or rhythmic gymnastics.
I like the call. By the way, I thought I heard Sid Sixero, but it was Chris Mad Dog Russo. I thought I was having flashbacks there for a second, but whatever. Kenny, thanks for this.
No problem.
Jesse,
happy
thanks
to be
for
here.
This. Nick Foligno, everyone else who joined today, we appreciate you, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.